Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming out on this wonderful Tuesday afternoon to hear all about the power of the benevolent web and how to harness it and ride it like a magical unicorn and make the world suck less. All right. Now, we have some wonderful panelists here. I am Alexis Ohanian, joined to my left by Christina Hsu, to my right by Dan McComas and Zach Walker. We're going to hear a little about them in 2 seconds, but first, some shameless self-promotion. I had the great privilege of co-founding a website called Reddit.com. After that, an uncorporation called Breadpig, and then helped launch a travel search engine called Hitmonk, all of which I hope you use every day. And I'm also an ambassador for Y Combinator, the seed stage venture firm that made all of this possible. I'm also trying to get a billboard up in Lamar Smith's home district, which includes Austin. And this billboard would say something to the effect of "Don't mess with the internet." We announced it yesterday at our "Don't mess with the internet" party, and we're already about 50% funded on CrowdTilt. So, if you'd be so kind, if you agree that the internet is not to be messed with, and that Lamar Smith and the people in his office should wake up every morning and go to work and see this billboard and to be reminded of it, by all means, tweet it out or Google Plus it. I'm not being sarcastic, really. I hope someone starts using Google Plus. Some quick stats about Reddit, which is something that all four of us have in common. And I think I'll let the four of them just sort of explain all the awesomeness that they're doing to expose benevolence that exists online. And I will take a moment to remind all of you that we saw this during the SOPA PIPA debate. It's very easily for certain folks to mischaracterize the internet as this thing that doesn't exist with a bunch of people on it. But in fact, the internet is people. And if we all believe that most people are generally good, then we can also believe the internet is generally good and not full of all of the awful, depraved stuff that we managed to hear on the evening news. And so I hope we can talk a lot more about harnessing that good. So first, Christina.
Hi, everyone. I'm Christina. So my path to where I am now is the classic all-American growing up story of a girl who discovered lolcats and somehow transitioned into philanthropy reform. Something everyone can relate to. So my first big project was in college. A few friends and I co-founded a conference called RaffleCon, which is a gathering of internet memes. So we invited people like this to come and talk about what it's like to be famous online, what it means to be famous online, who should be famous online, and it was a really interesting two-day event, and we're actually in our third incarnation now. The next one is going to be May 4th and 5th in Boston, and it'll feature all kinds of people that you may have seen in images online, but in real life. So from there, I got a job with Alexis working at Breadpig, and my focus there has really been how do we help nonprofits harness the power of the web. You know, we have this huge community. We work very closely, especially with Reddit, but it's a huge community of people who are really generous, who want to be making the world a better place with their time or their amazing talents. But sometimes, you know, not everyone has time to be just browsing Charity Navigator all day. So what we try to do is, A, point geeks towards nonprofits that are really cool, like Donors Choose, which Zach will be talking more about, and B, help nonprofits figure out how to attract more of a following, because I think we're kind of in a world of really oversaturated messages. You know, it's like, stop Kony, we have to stop poverty, there's these homeless hotspots in Austin. It's like there's so much going on that sometimes it's hard to know what to pay attention to. And my personal philosophy is that humor goes a long way towards that. You know, it's not, we have to take these things seriously, but unless we present them in a way that's approachable and accessible to people, they're just not going to pay attention. So for example, with Breadpig, we did this project with a nonprofit in the Bay Area called The Bread Project. They contacted us because our names were so similar. And
we were threatening to sue them.
And then we were trying to help them figure out how to raise awareness about their project in the Bay Area, which is a geek bastion, as you know. So we came up with the idea of, why don't you guys make some Reddit cookies? And so we helped them connect with the Reddit people, and they made these Reddit cookies, and now they're doing a whole line of startup cookies for whoever wants. And it's, you know, it's directly financially benefiting their mission, but also raising a lot of awareness about what they do, which is cool. And then somewhere along the way, I also stumbled onto the Awesome Foundation, which one of my friends started in Boston 2.5 years ago. So the Awesome Foundation is an international network of people who are taking philanthropy into their own hands. They're saying, you know, you don't have to be a Carnegie or somebody who's a billionaire to give money and make a difference. Every one of us, we have some amount of money that we're just wasting on like lattes or whatever it is. And you can set that money aside and together we make a really big difference. And so the idea is 10 friends or more giving $100 of their own money every month. And that's a $1,000 grant that you can give to anyone in cash, no strings attached, just to make the world more awesome. So this is how we do it. We basically write a giant check to someone. I think this guy in pictured here is showing off a prototype of the cotton candy cannon. So we've obviously funded a lot of things that are not very serious, but also things with a huge social impact. And so I, in particular, worked with the founders to incorporate a nonprofit called the Institute on Higher Awesome Studies. And our goal is to sort of be the coordinating mechanism for all of these little chapters that are everywhere. I mean, we have 35 chapters on 3 continents. And then also to start new chapters in places that could use a little bit of awesome to help them get back on their feet. So.
And Christina is too humble to mention it, so I am. A few months after she started IHAZ, she was able to procure $250,000 from the Knight Foundation to take this awesome model and apply it to journalism. And she's already launched the chapter in Detroit to do just that. So Google, learn more. Yes. And now Dan.
Hello, I'm Dan McComas, and I'm lucky enough to come to you primarily due to the invention that Alexis did with Reddit. So I'm a longtime Redditor, and I have been a participant in a lot of these weird projects that Reddit does in the depths of their community. The first one that actually introduced me to Reddit was through a couple years ago. JetBlue did this project where they would send you for 30 days. You could fly anywhere as long as you didn't miss a flight. So a couple of the Redditors banded together, and we funded these two guys who had never met each other to go around the country. And it was crazy. They stayed at our house. And that was my first introduction to the community side of Reddit. A couple months later, I had kind of a fleeting idea of what a secret Santa might look like on Reddit. So I proposed it, and within a few hours, I had embarked on this journey of creating Reddit GIFs, which I had no idea how much it would change my life at the time. But we do a Secret Santa and many things like Secret Santa. And this last year we had a Guinness World Record setting, almost close to 40,000 participants in about 125 countries do our Secret Santa. The idea of the Secret Santa is interesting in the big concept when you hear those numbers, but I think really the power is in the one-on-one interactions that happen within a Secret Santa. You're assigned a person. You research that person to figure out what the best thing in the world for them is. The point is not to care what you get back. The point is to care what you give. And what we found is that the feelings that people have throughout that process lend themselves greatly to also funneling that giving to other organizations. So we've worked closely with Bread Pig a few times. And we're currently working with Donors Choose, who Zach is from. And over the last few weeks, we've raised close to $36,000 for Donors Choose. And about 6 months ago, Reddit Gifts was formally acquired by Reddit. So we're part of Reddit now. And I spend my days and nights thinking about how to use the community of Reddit to do good. So I can't think of any better situation to be in.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan. Now, last but certainly not least, Zach Walker.
Hi, guys. So my name is Zach Walker, and this is a little bit about what I do at DonorsChoose.org, none of which will mean much to you if you're not familiar with the org and what we do. So we'll get into that actually on the next slide. But just a little bit about how I came to do what I do now. I was in the music industry for about 5 years, helping to sell records for Warner Music Group. And basically part of my job was to prepare the sales team to sell records. I guess it was fall of 2006, Paris Hilton was putting out a record, and part of my job was to prepare the sales team to sell a Paris Hilton record, which I did not feel great about. So literally that was the moment I decided to leave the music industry and try to do something that made me feel a little bit better about my life.
And so let's make a note of this. This is something positive that Paris Hilton has actually done for the world, right? Paris Hilton doesn't make that album. Zach's still working at Warner and not at Donor's Shoes. So thank you, Paris Hilton.
Yep, and yeah, and so if we go to the next slide, if you guys can bear with the cheesy music, this will give you a little bit.
There are few times in history when the saying "we're all in this together" would be more applicable than right now.
He came up with a revolutionary idea during lunch in the teacher's lounge.
My colleagues and I were talking about books that we wanted our students to read, field trips we wanted to take them on, art supplies that we needed, but these ideas wouldn't go beyond the teacher's lunchroom. And then I just figured that there were people from all walks of life who wanted to help improve our public schools.
Through Donors Choose, ordinary citizens can directly fund projects initiated by enterprising public school teachers.
Teachers request dictionaries, science kits, field trips, resources that their students need to thrive. Then you can give to the project request that most inspires you with a donation of any amount. And DonorsChoose.org delivers the materials to the school.
It's such a simple, wonderful idea. It connects individual donors with individual classrooms and individual teachers and individual projects. You know exactly who you're helping and how you're helping them.
It's tough getting a dollar. I don't like to give them all away, so if I do, I'd like to know where it's going.
When I started teaching last year, I didn't have any books for my students.
It put the supplies in my classroom within 2 weeks.
An art class in the Bronx had no paintbrushes, and now every single student has a set.
If you took a picture from the beginning of the year, and now it's like empty and full.
You as a donor can expect to get photographs of the activity taking place, student thank you notes, a teacher impact letter, illustrating, proving the impact that you've had.
The thank you cards from the children are awesome.
I love to give and know that I have a connection.
Get you right there.
It's a very easy way to give back to public schools.
And I think that takes the best of what the internet offers, an ability for people to self-organize around communities of shared concern.
This is exactly the kind of social innovation we should be encouraging across this country.
I love DonorsChoose.org, and it's why I'm on the board and why I'm committed to helping in any way I can.
Make sure you check it out, DonorsChoose.org.
Let's not underestimate the power each of us has to change the world for someone.
Cool. So that's kind of just an overview of what we do, and that's a video that we spend a long time trying to secure all of the rights to show publicly. One person in particular took a long time for us to get approval from, so now we try to use it as often as we can to do that. So yeah, just a little bit more about DonorsChoose.org is, we say we have a 1 million person community, and that basically refers to 200,000 teachers that have used the site, as well as about 800,000 people that have donated through the site. We have at least one teacher registered at 50% of U.S. public schools, and that's, there are about 110,000 U.S. public schools, so we're in about 50% of those, and the vast majority of projects funded on our site are from high poverty, or schools that are in high poverty areas. And then since 2000, that $110 million raised to date is all going straight to classroom projects. So that's money that's going into classrooms to help improve the education for these kids and help give these teachers access to things that they need to do their job. And of that $110 million, the average donation is usually about $50 all told. So small amounts of money that are making a huge difference. We've hit six million students this year and hoping to just keep on growing. And the ultimate goal is to get teachers in every single school in the country, every high poverty school in the country at least, using the site.
Awesome. I'm a huge, huge DonorsChoose.org fan, and you guys are looking at the future of philanthropy. There is no way a nonprofit, I don't want to be so extreme. The nonprofits that are winning right now and will continue to win are the ones that make a $10 donation feel like a $10,000 donation. And if I always say this, but it's so true, if we can see what people are tweeting for breakfast across the world right now, why can't we have that same connection with our donation? If you can't get someone equally as excited, I don't know how you survive. Now, another shameless thing. I've got about $5,000 left in matching funds that I'm trying to match in Donors Choose projects that I announced at the start of South By. So if you use BreadPig, that code at checkout will instantly match whatever your donation is to whatever classroom you want. We particularly love math and science classrooms because we need more geeks in the world, but it's up to you. Whatever you
want. Wait. Now, if you go to donorschoose.org/RedditGifts
yes.
and you donate through there and use the code UPVOTE, that will double your donations.
Can we allow double codes?
I don't think so.
Oh, we can't. Oh, all right. So you have to choose
slash RedditGifts
or BreadPig, one or the other. No. Go to, yeah. See.
Does anybody else have a code? That
yeah, any other codes you want to share? But basically, I am the most biased panel moderator ever. Because I've had the privilege and pleasure of working with every one of these people. Before we get into this, I wanted to share a quick story about Reddit. And one of the first moments, a lot of people ask whether or not this was planned and whether or not there was some grand vision that Steve and I had to create some website that would do lots of good in the world. And it absolutely was not. We just wanted a place that people would go to where they could find out what was new and interesting online. And if it was a cat photo or a New Yorker article or whatever, that was good enough. But early on, after Mr. Splashy Pants took the world by storm, I noticed this one comment on a Reddit thread that someone posted, and it was by Powerhead. So user Redditor Powerhead, if you're out there. And it was basically saying that we've done a few things here, but is there a way to actually see if we can take giving to a more meaningful level on Reddit? And this front page back then, if you can believe it, with only 200 or so upvotes. But I saw this and I thought, you know what? All right, I accept your challenge, Redditor.
What year was this in?
This was 2007. And so I took a photo of my dad's cat with some postcards. And we were friends with XKCD. Of course, Randall Monroe does pretty well on Reddit. And I asked him if he'd be willing to do a little fundraiser for a nonprofit that Reddit chose. And so at the end of the year on the Reddit blog, I put up a post. This was December 2007, basically saying, hey, we're going to give away some cool signed cards from XKCD if you're willing to make a donation. It'll be sort of a lottery style. And I was thrilled because after a couple weeks, it was really short notice, we raised $3,000. Now, again, please keep some perspective here. At the moment, I was thrilled. And full disclosure, we'd actually only raised about $2,600, but I wanted like $3,000 is a nice rounder number. So I threw in a little, goosed it up a little bit. And the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, were the ones that were chosen by Reddit. And this felt kind of cool. But very, very quickly, the Reddit community, the hive mind, realized we don't need to wait for a moderator to do anything. We don't need to wait for an admin to write a blog post. And these days, Reddit raises this much money in a few minutes. And I have been so awed by how far it has come. And I think all three of us here, all three of our panelists here are evidence as to the power of a bunch of connected people on the internet. And one story that I feel like encapsulates it so well and that the New York Times loves so much that they republished that I've made into a nice sexy little bit.ly. You should read it. Don't read it now because I don't want to make you guys all cry. But today you, tomorrow me, if you go visit that, if you haven't read it yet, you should. And just go ahead and tweet it and Facebook it so your friends will all think you're really awesome. But this is... This is not a panel to make us all feel guilty about all the things that are wrong in the world, because we know that there are bad things going on. But there are lots of good things, too. And while everyone wants to talk, usually, about the few bad apples online, there are so many good and delicious ones. So, was that a strained metaphor?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I like apples. let me get this started with Dan, because you've seen this start from a very basic level, and then you took it upon yourself to just say, I'm going to build a website that takes advantage of this thing that I see snowballing on Reddit. Can you tell us about that social snowball that I've heard you speak of?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other night, and they said, actually, it's called social proof, but I always call it the social snowball. But, I mean, I get wrapped into it as much or more as anybody else. I mean, I created Reddit GIFs because the community wanted it created. And I just happened to have the skills. But, I love it. People post on Reddit. Somebody posted they were helping an African orphanage that had been broken into, and somebody attacked the man with a machete, the guy who ran this orphanage. And whoever was this volunteer at this orphanage came to Reddit and said, hey, we need, I think it was $2,000 to build a fence to keep these bandits out. And within 24 hours, I think Reddit had donated close to $100,000, which is like many years' salary in Africa. And I donated, and many people that I know donated. And I don't exactly know what it is. I think that part of the magic on Reddit is that there's many small things going on all the time. There's people helping each other one-on-one. And I love to talk about the foundation that's built on Reddit, which I think is what really drives and powers these bigger donation drives that you hear about, $500,000 to Donors Choose, you know, $100,000 to this orphanage. Well, there's countless small donations happening. Within Secret Santa, there's always donations going on that we don't even know about. Somebody is funding somebody for a seeing eye dog. And those little stories kind of make their way through the Reddit community, such that I think when one of these bigger asks comes along, it makes it really possible. It makes people feel comfortable to mobilize and really do good.
All right. Now, if there are people in the audience here, now how many of you are Redditors? Quick, very scientific poll. Okay, how many of you are diggers?
Oh, rock on. Okay.
What? I was actually dared to ask that question. Okay. So, but clearly organizations like Donors Choose, like I said, are winning. Why? What is it about the model that makes this so appealing and so powerful?
Yeah. So I think there are a few things. I think one of the things that is really appealing to folks, primarily people, maybe younger people who haven't maybe even donated at all to any cause, and also public education isn't necessarily like a sexy cause, I think, if you don't have kids that are in the public school system and that sort of thing. So I think there's a couple things. One is the low barrier of entry, basically. So you can donate a dollar through our site, and I think, you know, that's something that anybody can do if they want to be part of this movement, this grassroots effort to raise money. Most folks can spare at least a buck. But also the way that our site enables you to kind of express your interests and your passions, mm-hmm. by searching. At any given time, we have about 20,000 teacher projects on our site. And you can search by your favorite book. You can search by your favorite sport. You can search by your hometown. Any variety of ways you can search for projects on our site. So you can almost always, even if public education isn't your thing, you can almost always find something that will get you excited. And that's, you know, I think one of the things that we saw with this first huge drive that Reddit did, which, you know, Alexis was talking about $3,000 that was raised. How long did it take?
2007. That took a couple weeks.
Okay. And so this was literally one person who said, we want to convince Stephen Colbert to do a rally in D.C., and we know his favorite charity is DonorsChoose.org, so let's blackmail him with charity, basically. And they set this goal, I think it was in September, and it was like early September, and they said by 10-10-10, October 10th of 2010, we want to raise 100, I can't ever get the numbers right, but over $100,000, whatever 10-10-10 is in dollars, by 10-10-10. And we saw that, and we saw donations start coming in, and we thought that was a ridiculous goal, but we were thrilled that people were excited about it, and they hit that within 24 hours, which kind of blew our minds, and that just kept going from there.
And also blew your servers, if I recall.
Oliver was not happy.
Yeah, but I will also say our tech team never gets excited when they sit, when we like explain it as our servers crashing, because I guess that technically isn't what happened, but in their defense, the servers held up, but it was, I can't even remember, it was a deadlock exception. Any people know what that means? I don't know, something like that.
Java problem.
But yeah, and I think that's what it was, and in the comments of that drive, you just saw again and again people saying, man, I just sent a bunch of kids in Utah my favorite book, or people were, you know, funding projects in honor of other Redditors, and funding projects in their hometowns, and I think it was just something that was really, I don't know, it's easy for you to express yourself in some way by donating on our site.
So the Reddit community, it sounds like plenty of you are Redditors, thank you for Redditing. There's about 35 million unique visitors a month, and you all, participate with pseudonyms, right? You have silly usernames like FluffyBunny26. And yet, when that happens on YouTube, you lose faith in humanity based on the comments. But yet, you see discussions on Facebook where people have real identities, and you also sometimes lose faith in humanity a little bit. How is it possible that a community of people who don't know each other are able to have Secret Santa exchanges and care so much that they can stalk one another in a friendly, helpful way, and likewise get so excited about sort of competing with one another to see who can donate and help one another out on Donors Choose? I'm turning to Christina for an answer to meaningful giving.
What, you're the one who made the website. Man.
Why? But I don't know anything about the nonprofit world.
Yeah, sure. So I think a lot of it has to do with what Zach just brought up, like your ability to look through the possible donations and tailor something. I think it's less about making that $10 donation feel like a $1,000 donation and more about knowing that that $10 donation is going to something that's very uniquely what you care about.
Is it transparent?
I think we saw, we saw this huge backlash against nonprofits in we've had so many huge natural disasters in the last few years. But in the wake of all of them, what I saw universally among internet geeks was this mistrust. It's like, I can give money to these huge NGOs, but what are they really spending it on? Why aren't they publishing? Like, why don't we know how much money is going to actual recovery efforts versus the operational costs? And as someone who's looked into the nonprofit world, operational costs are also important. You know, nonprofits need operational costs to like function. You know, that's like saying I don't really need any of my internal organs. I'm just gonna have hands. It's gonna be awesome. You know, it doesn't work that way. But you understand that mistrust, and I think the magic of something like Donors Choose is, it's not, people talk about crowdfunding, and I had a really interesting conversation with the founder of CrowdTilt the other day about, he calls his platform group funding. And I thought, that's like, it's at South by Southwest, like everyone wants to create a new stupid term. But I think the group funding versus crowdfunding distinction is actually really interesting, because crowdfunding is saying, I want all of you anonymous people who I'm not connected to somehow be behind this idea, right? It's the equivalent of jumping into a mosh pit full of people you don't know and hoping that they don't drop you. But with group funding, you're saying, I belong to this community, and I want to see projects happen in this community. I care about this book. You're creating, like, the act of giving money is actually a really, really powerful social exchange. And so by donating, you're not just donating, you're creating a connection between yourself and this project and saying, I've invested a little bit of myself here, and I care that this project is going to succeed. I care that these kids are going to get this book. And I think, with Reddit, the magic of Reddit, I think, is that it, and there's a lot of other internet communities who have done the same thing, but I think Reddit is a really big and really shining example. They've done a really good job of making people who are users of the site really identify as a Redditor. And so, when the Donors Choose thing came along, people felt like they were Team Reddit, right? Like they were, it wasn't just them giving money arbitrarily to this group cause. It was that they felt proud, the same way that you feel proud of your hometown's baseball team or whatever it is, right? It's that same sort of allegiance of like, let's show other people how awesome our community is. And the fact that it's able to be done pseudonymously, I think, it has a lot to do with the curation early on. People, there was a certain tone that was encouraged in the community, and people really liked that. And I think it also helps that Reddit was an underdog for a long time. Like it was the small community for people who didn't use Dig, and that's obviously changed. But I think that mentality of like we really identify with each other, we care about each other, persists. And I think that's why Reddit is so successful at fundraising.
I think also there's an aspect of it there that is, I think the average Redditor enjoys the contrast of like Reddit being this crazy place where insane stuff happens and these ridiculous conversations happen, but then it's like the next day we come together and do this really amazing, inspiring thing for the community, and who the hell would have ever thought that would have happened? I know that that's something that I think is really great about Reddit.
Do any of you have ambitions in the sort of making the world suck less venue, like in terms of nonprofit or the like? All right, awesome. Yeah, look at the hands going up. Rock on. Okay, I would like to find ways, as we've all had different experiences that have been able to use a community like Reddit. Sounds like we got a lot of Redditors here. What are the approaches? If I have an idea, if I want to start the next Random Acts of Pizza, hopefully you guys all know about Random Acts of Pizza. If you need a pizza, or you want to gift a pizza, you pretty much go on Random Acts of Pizza and you can either acquire one or gift one. And it's phenomenal. It actually works. If I want to create the next Random Acts of Pizza, where do I begin?
Well, I think that you've got to begin being part of the community. And that's the hard part, I think. It's not a high barrier to entry, but you got to be part of the Reddit community. And you got to be not afraid to fail. Like, I think it's okay to put out an idea like Random Acts of Pizza and have it not work. and have it not take hold, you know? Chances are somebody is going to take you up on it. You're going to post a comment in some thread deep in Ask Reddit or something. One person's going to take on to it. Maybe you were hoping for 100. And then it doesn't go anywhere from there, and that's okay, because the next time you post that idea a month later, that one person's going to remember, and he's going to tell somebody, and it's going to start working. It's just important to not be afraid to fail.
A precursor to Random Acts of Pizza, I don't usually tell people this, was a Random Acts of Hummus that I tried to start. And despite my best efforts,
I think it's important, too, to, you know, our conversation has been really Reddit-centric, and there were also a lot of non-Redditors here, so I want to make it clear that these dynamics work across other communities as well. And, you know, at South By, bastion of social media marketing, you hear all the time about people who are like, you just need to make your Facebook, you know, splash page a certain way, and then everyone's going to flock to you. And, you know, for me, it's like, that's like a random dude showing up in your neighborhood and, like, telling you that he's really awesome, you should come over to his house. It's like, who are you? Stop. Go away. Right? So it's like, for any community, you don't have to have been there for day one, but show that you're invested in the community and that you're interested in the community beyond just using it as a resource. I think, you know, for nonprofit folks, this can be really hard because people are busy, right? Everyone's really busy. You don't have time to just, like, dilly-dally on Reddit all day like we do, just to be able to build those rapport. But I think the important thing is that you all have networks that you do enjoy spending time on, right? The networks that you naturally go to in your free time. I think for us, the reason why we're able to leverage Reddit is because Reddit is what we do in our free time. It's the thing that we enjoy, and it's a community that we are part of, not just because we need it, but also because we like it. And so I think, you know, don't always worry about how to tap into the Twitter or the Pinterest or the whatever. It's like, what communities make sense to you, and are you happy to participate in online? Because the reason why you're happy to participate in them probably means that there are other people like you who share your values and that you could probably leverage.
Yeah, I've got a teacher friend in Utah who, she's kind of a Redditor. She hasn't had much luck getting Redditors to donate to her Donors Choose projects, but she is voracious when it comes to getting people to donate to her Donors Choose projects, unlike anything I've ever seen. Totally inspired by it, but she, you know, I think she's got like maybe 500 Facebook friends, and I don't know how many of them are actual friends, probably 30, but I swear to God, she posts on her Facebook probably 3 times a week asking people to donate to her projects. And she tells me that, like, it doesn't always work, but she usually will get one donation out of it. And yesterday was her birthday, so she posted, will you just please just donate $1 to my Donors Choose project? And it had $300 at the beginning of the day, and by the end of the day, it was funded. You know, and these are mostly people that don't know her or their other teachers, but who figure, you know, I can donate $1 to her project for her birthday, sure. And it worked. I mean, it's a great way to leverage that.
What is amazing about that story is one thing that we're actually planning to do. We're going to be starting to ask teachers when they register what their birthday is. And the idea, literally the idea there is to email donors that have supported that teacher in the past when it's that teacher's birthday and they have active projects. So it's good to know that it might work.
I think it will work.
Yeah, and I think kind of broadening it again beyond the Reddit spectrum too, I think for nonprofits, and people just trying to do good in the world, I think it is about the community in Reddit's case especially, but it's also about just having the tools and like creating something that enables any community that wants to grab onto it to easily do that and to kind of express it in their own way. So that could be, I mean, the Reddit fundraisers have all like been funding projects all across the board, so there wasn't really like a focus. Well, the Reddit Gifts one now is focused on books. But another example is Adam Lambert, if you guys aren't familiar with him, maybe you are, was a runner-up on American Idol. But he, I guess his fans are kind of crazy and would always send him all kinds of stuff for his birthday. You know, stuff he doesn't need, stuff that ends up getting thrown away or given away. And so he just decided randomly to say, hey, instead of sending me all this stuff, which is great and I love it, but maybe instead, why don't you guys donate to music and arts projects on DonorsChoose.org. So he basically created a page on our site that was all focused on, you know, theater projects and chorus projects and things like that. And his fans, who it turns out are mostly middle-aged women in the South, who would have known, but they're also like people that have more money than a lot of folks would have to, you know, to donate to a cause, and more than our typical donor. So they actually, like, their average donation size was much higher than what we usually see. And they just went crazy because, you know, they felt this connection to Adam Lambert, and they were supporting a cause that he was into, but also these, you know, helping to create new Adam Lamberts in all these high schools. And, and I mean, it was crazy because that ended up, you know, we weren't really even sure what was going to happen. And that ended up raising over $500,000 and ended up creating this big competition among the various Adam Lambert unofficial fan groups to see who could win a live chat with Adam Lambert. So, yeah, it was kind of amazing. And so, yeah, I think it's about, like, just giving people in these different communities some way to kind of express their community through their giving is a really big thing to do.
So I'm wondering, like, with the huge Colbert Donors Choose drive we did, there was this, like, goal at the end that that he would do an Ask Me Anything on Reddit. And I kind of felt like, I mean, that wasn't the only reason people donated for sure, but, like, that was a big, you know, that was a big carrot. And then you mentioned that Adam Lambert would do a video interview or something like is that something you see? Like, is that part of the story of success?
It's not. We don't usually do that as a thing. The Adam Lambert one, yes, because we knew that that was something that his fans would love, and we knew it was, and just based on that audience, we knew it was something that would work for them. And with the Colbert thing, it was basically, and for those that weren't following that as it happened, basically this was a spontaneous event that happened on Reddit that raised almost $200,000 in 48 hours to blackmail Colbert into doing a rally. And because we had a relationship with him, we reached out to him to make sure he knew about it. He wrote this amazing thank you letter to the Reddit community that we posted there for him. And basically we were trying to come up with ways to just keep the momentum going. And that was when we came up with this idea for the AMA, which non-Redditors, it's basically an interview. So it's like an exclusive interview with Redditors. And I will say, actually, and this is kind of an example of being part of the community and kind of having, like, I think a grassroots campaign is more successful than an organization coming somewhere and saying, hey, this is what we think you guys should do. Because I think when we announced that, it didn't seem to excite people. I think people were excited about it, but they were like, we've raised $200,000 already, and now we have to raise another $100,000? And there are people that really, I don't think, were stoked about that. And so I think that was one thing that we learned, because I think they saw it as like, we haven't impressed him enough yet. We have to do this to impress him.
He's a hard man to please.
Right. I think in some cases it does work. And, you know, there was I think it was a Freakonomics episode that I listened to at some point that was basically just talking about why people give. And they basically, I remember them talking about the two biggest reasons that people give that studies have shown again and again are match offers. Right pick or upvote. And prizes. And so, a live chat thing is kind of a prize, but those of you that listen to NPR, WNYC in New York, where it's, you know, they always give away a MacBook Pro. If you donate during this window, you're going to be entered to win a MacBook Pro. And it's literally one MacBook Pro, and, you know, how many thousands of people are donating, but it works. And then with regards to the match offer, another interesting thing that that they found is that the multiple of the match doesn't actually increase giving. It's just as long as there's a match. So if it's like a 3-to-1 match, it doesn't really drive the needle any more than a 1-to-1 match.
Well, this is good to know. So now I should just go for the 2-for-1 minimum. Don't bother with a 10-to-1 match program. Well, they're free data, you guys. This is extant in every single online community that I've ever seen. That sort of Pareto principle, where 80% of the content is actually being produced by about 20% of the user base. And it actually goes further when you start talking about people who are creating big stuff with your platform. And don't think of online communities any differently from you would real life ones. Christina's example is absolutely spot on, because you don't just show up in a new neighborhood and expect to make friends by telling everyone how great you are. Instead, take advantage of the fact that you can create tools that other people can use. I love the stories of celebrities using Donors Choose as a fundraising tool. I also love the story of a teacher named Debbie Guardino, who was able to raise $500,000 by going to Joplin after the tornado. She was a public school teacher, a Donuts Choose teacher in Virginia, and just cared enough to get on a plane, go there, and start telling these teachers how to rebuild their own schools. This was a woman who 6 years ago would have had the exact same ambition, the exact same drive, but the only tools she had available were maybe a blog, an email list, and if somehow she were on Facebook, you know, a Facebook account. She can actually now use these tools that exist within Donuts Choose to do a lot of good herself. And I'm curious to know how the Awesome Foundation model has grown without any.
Actually, on oversight. That, I think that was a really interesting story because Donors Choose is this fabulous tool, but I think what Debbie really identified was that even though it was a powerful tool, not everyone who needed to know about that tool was there. And I think that's one of the sort of big elephants in the room about online giving is who are you leaving out of the picture, who doesn't have access to these because they don't have these online communities. And so I guess with Awesome Foundation, you know, we get lumped into these like tech community things because the people who founded it are members of the tech community. But if you actually look at our tech, we are so low tech. We have a mailing list. That is the extent. We don't have I don't even remember the names of all the like whatever weird Ning or we don't have any of that stuff. We just have a mailing list that everyone can be on and we email each other, right? Each of the chapters has their own mailing list. Woo. And we have a Facebook page, which is not used as much even as our mailing list, and a web form that's super simple. So, you know, for us, I like to think of technology as not just systems that exist online, but a technology to me is a tool that you build to allow people to do something that they weren't able to do before. The Awesome Foundation model is not new by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I've been talking to a lot of people, and what really fascinates me is that immigrant groups have been doing the same thing for like decades and decades. It's the idea of getting together and pooling your money and using that to make a bigger impact than any person could is as old as civilization probably. But I think the thing that's unique about it is that we are able to bring this model in a way that excites people to a new generation of people who maybe don't have those experiences and don't think along those lines. So for us, the real technology at Awesome Foundation isn't our website or our mailing list. It's the idea of the Awesome Foundation and the experiences that we've had about how to make that model work. And I think the thing that I like most about the Awesome Foundation is that, you know, we have 35 chapters, and I think all of them do something slightly differently. So it's about taking that model and adapting it to whatever works within your community. And I think that's really important for the tools as well. You know, tools are not neutral. When you create a tool, you're embedding a certain set of values and a certain set of expectations and assumptions. And I think it's really, really, really extra important for people who are creating online giving tools to think about who are you leaving out of the picture and what can you do to invite them in at least a little bit.
Do you think, what do you think is the future of Awesome Foundation? What do you want it to be doing? How big do you want it to be?
I think it's something that I hope just exists everywhere. I mean, people don't have to have permission to start their own Awesome Foundation. We're moving really rapidly, but right now, if you look at the distribution of where we are, we're very heavily Anglophone, and we're very heavily in well-developed cities. And so that's part of what you know, IHAZ is trying to do, the institute that we started, is start Awesome Foundation chapters in places that one would not traditionally consider there being an Awesome Foundation. And that's a very wordy way of going about it, but basically, you know, the traditional philanthropy world has this like binary of we're the rich people and you're the poor people. We're going to give you money and tell you what to do with it because we know what's better because we have more money. And I think that's so broken. And I think that, you know, what I'm really hoping to accomplish with Awesome Foundation is to say everyone is awesome. You know, people in impoverished communities that are the recipients of aid are just as awesome as the people in the communities that are giving them money. And I think it's about identifying that awesomeness and empowering it and not being very patronizing to them and telling them what they need to do to make their lives better.
Preach. All right, Zach, future of Donors Choose. We're holding you to this.
Yeah. That's a good question. Well, I mean, again, like I said in the intro, you know, our goal is to be in 100% of high poverty schools in the country. So that's kind of our big ultimate goal right now. And it's a tricky one because we don't, you know, we rely on word of mouth above all else, pretty much. Facebook is helping a lot with that. And we don't, you know, we don't pay for any advertising. Anything that you hear or see, DonorsChoose.org related was donated. There are a couple PSAs airing on Clear Channel stations right now, and unfortunately some Rush Limbaugh shows as well, which we're not stoked about, but that's happening. Yeah, and I think that's the goal. I mean, we do ultimately, one thing that we want to do is to make our code open source so that other folks can access it and create their own DonorsChoose.org versions for different sectors in different countries, et cetera. So that's another goal that's on the horizon at some point.
Awesome. And Dan, I know, so there's still time to participate using the code UPVOTE over at DonorsChoose.com/ReadyGifts and participate in the book swap?
No, the exchanges are closed for participation.
I've got to mail my book still.
You have until the 22nd.
We've got three more exchanges coming up, though. So
what's up?
So stay tuned. We got a sock exchange coming up, which I love socks. Cookbooks. And board games, if you're that kind of a person. But really, I mean, the future of Reddit Gifts is just we want to get closer to the community, so we have these smaller exchanges going on, hoping to get closer to the community, and I just want to inspire more people to do stuff like Reddit Gifts. That's what I think about.
Awesome. I think there is a very bright future to see this many people interested on a Tuesday at the end of a very long South by Southwest about something that does not involve increasing your number of fans on Facebook or retweets on Twitter or the next mobile photo sharing food app or whatever it is. I mean, I like food too, but I don't know. Anyway, this is an opportunity now for you all to ask some questions. We've got a little bit of time left, and there's a hand running up. Okay, sir, could you... I guess we'll toss the microphone over. And...
You
want to
pick one?
Yes. Oh, him. Right there. He raised his hand with gusto.
Nope.
No.
No, I don't need it.
No, you do. Because
I can repeat it.
Okay. So full disclosure, I work in fundraising in a nonprofit. And so my question is, what do you see the roles and responsibilities of nonprofits within a community like Reddit to being participants, or are they, do you really view them as just recipients?
Wow, we should.
I think they should be. They should be participants because, you know, above all, the thing that people are concerned about when doing online giving or any giving these days, you know, donors are getting smarter. They have a lot of questions to ask, and if at the very, very, very least, as a nonprofit on an internet community or any community, if you're asking for money, you need to be comfortable answering those questions as well. And I think, you know, if the community needs to know a certain set of things before they're comfortable giving you money, it's your job to present them with that information and to educate them about the issues without being too preachy or, you know, like to do it as part of a normal dialogue, the same way that you would approach a neighbor and say, hey, did you hear about this? Isn't this interesting? Not like, you need to give me money right now or you're a terrible person. Never do that.
Yeah, a general rule is to basically, if you want to see the epic fail of it, you look at the Woody Harrelson Ask Me Anything interview. This is very illustrative of the fact that the old model of, and this was, he was there to promote a movie. This is something fairly benign. Like, he wasn't making us feel guilty about it. He was just answering every single question asked of him with an answer about the movie. Not, you know, when you get asked, why are you vegan, and you somehow find a way to mention the new movie that's coming up and link to the trailer, you know, it feels very broken. It feels like a false conversation when, in fact, people online want to have the same conversations they have, like Christina said, with their neighbors. And I presume you're with Livestrong? So because if you're not, your nonprofit's going to be really pissed because you're repping the heck out of Livestrong.
I think, yeah, it's important to represent yourself. If you're going to ask for something, you need to be transparent. But more than that, you need to be available after the fact to keep coming back and being transparent, because people are going to have questions for a long time, and they're going to want to know, all right, so we donated $1,000 as a community. Like, what have you done with it, or what are you planning to do with it? It's important for you to be there to answer that right then. This guy in Africa, I don't think he was a super big Redditor, but the thing that he did, which was great, was, you know, every couple hours he would come back and say, here's a picture I took of them being super happy. And then he would answer questions. And that kept it going.
Yeah, and that's a short-term cost for very long-term gains. Very long-term. Especially we're talking Redditors, we all spend way too much time on the internet. And we're at a point now where I feel like a lot of the stuff that Redditors start to support bubbles up everywhere else. And if you want to influence the tastemakers of the internet, they are, not all of them, but most of them are probably wasting a lot of time on Reddit. So it's a very, very valuable audience to treat well.
And I can just say that when we were the beneficiaries of this huge campaign, one of the things that we did was we had our CEO, our CTO, myself, and our COO all basically doing an Ask Me Anything interview. And so we hung around Reddit for pretty much the entire day and just answered questions of folks. And they were like, one of the things that's awesome about working there is we're completely transparent and honest about everything that we do. So we can always give someone a straight up answer. And there's actually a link to that. If you go to donorstews.org/Reddit gifts in that first blur, there's actually a link to that AMA if you're interested in checking it out.
And what happened? What was the response when Redditors asked? Because we're fairly technical. When we asked about your servers going down, it was nerd porn, wasn't it?
There was some nerd porn involved. Yeah, nerd prawn, I think technically. But we did have our director of engineering go into details on that, which I don't really understand. But
that's awesome.
I think generally you want to treat it as a long-term relationship and not a one-night stand. You know, wine and dine first.
Sweet that. Yeah. It's worth the investment, though. As are healthy long-term relationships. Can we tweet that so my girlfriend sees it? Yes, all the way in the back. I love people who raise their hands with gusto. Oh, and actually, if there are follow-up questions, you can find us all on the Twitters. So tweet at us. Yes?
Actually, I've got two questions. The first question is, there are starting to be a number of these platforms, whether it's, you know, for individuals or specific genres. How do you start cutting through the noise and make yourself known? And then the second one is, are you experiencing any donor fatigue, and how are you going to address that?
All right, my glib answer to your first question is make a cute mascot. I'll let the panel take it from there.
Sorry, what was the second question? Are you experiencing
donor fatigue? Yeah, have you
donor
experienced
fatigue?
Donor fatigue?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good question for you, Zach.
Sure. I will say, I mean, I think we've had a hard time trying to figure out a good way to replicate what we saw with that initial huge onslaught of donations from the Reddit community. And there have been a couple other campaigns. And I think within that community, we did at one point start to feel like there may have been a little bit of fatigue. And that may or may not be because it was actually there, or it could just be because there wasn't as compelling of a campaign. I think overall, if you have people that are committed to what you do, they're going to come back and support you. We try not to email folks too often with straight up fundraising asks. We try to make them relevant whenever we can.
The letters from the teachers. Like, that is the quick way to get around donor fatigue.
This is true, yeah. So anytime you support a project, the teacher will post a letter basically about how that project is going or turned out, and that's an email that everybody gets. So it's not a straight-up ask for money, but it's kind of a gentle way of saying, hey, this teacher really appreciated what you did, and she has another project up. But, you know, we've seen, I think we have about 20% of donors come back and give again. But one thing that we have seen is if those people stick with us for 2 years, they basically stick with us for good. So that's what we're trying to figure out, is just the best way to kind of improve those numbers, to get those people to stick with us for 2 years, because then I think they're hooked. And then at that point, there's much less risk of fatigue, I think, and those people are on board and they're all in, and you can bug them whenever you want.
Yeah, I think part of the problem with donor fatigue is this really unhealthy practice that the nonprofit industry has adopted, which is the constant crisis, right? Like, oh my God, did you know that there are poor people right now? You need to donate right now. And the next week they send you the same email or a different email, and it's like, you can't pretend like, I mean, yes, there are so many messed up things happening in the world, but you cannot keep having these moments of like crisis because people get really worn out, and it's like crying wolf, you know, when something really, really bad happens, it's hard for you to get their attention. So I've been really interested in this idea of the funding cycle as like a sugar crash. So if you look at the amount of funding that goes into a city after a disaster hits, you know, New Orleans or Haiti or something like that, there's a huge spike of funding when all the news people are talking about it. And then the funding actually dips below the normal level because people are so worn out. And I think part of what we're interested in doing at Awesome Foundation is redirecting that sugar crash into a more, again, like a long-term relationship. So we're building a tool for people to be able to donate to Awesome Foundation chapters, not $100 at a time, but $10 forever. And I think, you know, that's a small enough amount of money, and if it's automated, it's not, it doesn't expend the energy of the donor and the emotional energy, which I think, you know, is the problem with the crisis
moment. Yeah, and I think you'll note all three of these examples here are exciting people, right? They're not, I mean, like, I think there's an amount of pride in knowing that I helped a classroom in Brooklyn, and there's some amount of pride in knowing that I helped make someone have a great Christmas with a Secret Santa gift, and there's some pride in knowing that I helped sponsor an Awesome Foundation chapter in Detroit, and that's the I think that's the kind of thing to breed. As opposed to the guilt. And now, technically, she had a first question about how to cut through all the noise. You guys have some quick answers that don't involve social media guru tactics?
No, I think cute animal mascots is all pretty right. much spot on. I mean tell your story and ask your friends to tell your story. You know, it's. I think there's like 8 million panels at South By about this. There's no good answer, though.
Okay, I think we can do one more. Christina, you can choose. I have to add something real quick.
Who's got the best question?
Who's got the best question?
Sorry, I had to add one more
back
Twitter
there
account.
Is very, very excited.
So this is all about like individuals, and I think that's really amazing. And it is sort of the long tail of giving, and the folks that you don't expect to be able to make these effects. Where do you feel like these massive companies that have all of these Reddit lovers and tech lovers living inside them should step in? I mean, you've talked about matching gifts, but is there something beyond that that, I don't know, like Google's and IBM's and Groupon's of the world should be doing?
Sounds like you're about to do some fundraising, Zach.
So one of the things that we do and that we love as a product essentially at for DonorsChoose.org is we enable corporations and foundations it's essentially a match offer, but what it is those corporations and foundations can set criteria of projects that they want to fund. So if it's a company that only wants to fund early literacy projects in San Diego, every project on our site that's an early literacy project in San Diego will be half price thanks to this company. And that company's logo is going to be on every one of those qualifying projects. When that project is funded, and anytime you make a donation, we ask if we can post that on your Facebook wall. That company is going to be shouted out on all of those donors' Facebook walls as well. And what's great about that is it actually, not the Facebook thing, but the match offers in general, is they help activate all of these citizen donors for us. So we've always historically wanted to have more citizen donors and corporate donors, and we still haven't quite gotten that balance right. But all of the corporate donors that we have enable thousands and thousands more citizen donors for us, because the lower the cost of a project, the more likely somebody's going to pitch in to help it, and the more likely that project's going to ultimately get funded. And you know, there's an example. Most recently, we had a big partnership in LA with the Wasserman Foundation, and the Wasserman Foundation funded $4 million worth of classroom projects. So $2 million of that was a match offer on our site for every public school project from LA Unified School District. But they also sent gift cards home with every single student in a Los Angeles school district school for their parents to use on our site to help their school. And that was, we've been in LA for a while and had, you know, thousands of teachers there, but this just opened up, you know, our site to so many teachers that had never heard of us before, so many parents who want to help out their schools but never knew that this was a vehicle to do it. And it's really helping, you know, activate this grassroots base of passionate people that want to improve schools.
And I would say, like, I think if part of your question was about how, as a big company, do you come into an internet community and not scare everyone off, I think the thing that I've seen really work is when big companies come in and they don't just say, I have money to throw around. Because, you know, people have some sort of distrust of a lot of large companies online. They're concerned about the ulterior motives and whatever. What really helps dispel that is if you come in and say, I have a really great in-kind donation idea, or I have a really great way to give that addresses a specific problem in this community that you would only know by being part of this community. So if you have somebody within your organization who is active in that community, ask them about how you think your company could give something that's really unique, not just money, not just time, but like something that catches the attention of people in a way that says like, oh, wow, you really get us, you know? And I think that I've seen on Reddit, that's usually the thing that works when large companies come in. When people come in and just want to give money, you know, there's concerns that they just want their logo everywhere. But if you come in and you actually have a very specific idea for how you can help, it requires a bit more effort on your part, but I think it goes a long way towards appeasing the community.
Well, there you go. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, but there are all of our Twitter handles. I want to thank Dan for putting all this together and whipping us into shape so we'd be ready. Yeah, Dan. And I want you all to have a fabulous rest of your South by Southwest. Come up here if you want to chat. Otherwise, tweet at us.
And we also have we have some swag. Yeah, Dan's got some Reddit stickers. I actually have some DonorsChoose.org gift cards.
If
you guys haven't tried that, the site out, come up and grab one of those and you can give it a run.
Yeah, I have high fives.
Yeah, high fives. And don't forget to tweet Paris Hilton thanks for bringing Zach to Donors Choose. Thanks, everyone.